Testing, 1, 2, 3, testing, 1, 2, 3.
I told Bill to go ahead and call.
Testing, 1, 2, 3, testing, 1, 2, oh!
He can take the message.
Okay, I have absolutely no questions for you.
See you in a few minutes.
I have a couple for you.
What I want to do is try and get an interview. I'm doing a book, and I publish a magazine called Film Heritage, which has been published for 10 years. And I want to get two interviews, one for the paper, and perhaps one, not of an actress starting out, but from the position of a, I don't want to say a novice, but
you
from somebody who hasn't made a whole lot of films,
right,
you know.
Right. A breakout person, as they say, studios.
Is that what they say?
That's what they say. I said, what is a breakout person? Is that someone doing a Clearasil commercial?
Right.
That's their phrase, a breakout person.
How did you get the part? Terrific first question. Break the ice.
I got the part because I read for it. How's that for an answer?
Really?
Yeah. I'd never met Mike Nichols or any of these guys before. And my agent sent me over to see Mike. I was the first person he saw, however. And
like
he also heard
house,
about me.
The first house you buy. You
first
look
to
at
the last, right?
The one, right.
And we had this theory. I will say it was not an accident. And I saw him on a Friday, and I guess Monday he started seeing the rest of the people. I mentioned the day of the week, because it's very important, because when I did meet him, he wanted to read me, but he said, you know, I got an idea. Tomorrow, the boys are coming over, meaning Warren and Jack, and we're going to read through the script, because it's the first chance we've all had to get together, meaning him and Warren and Jack and Carol Eastman, writer. And
who's called Adrian Joyce?
Adrian Joyce,
that's
right.
Wrote Five Easy Pieces.
Right, and Puzzle of a Downfall Child. And anyway, so she would like to hear the part. She didn't want to read it. And Carol was there, too, and she from the first, she later told me, wanted me to do it. Like, you know, right away she felt it. And so she twinkled at me, and he said, well, would you do it? And I said, yes, as long as you don't hold it against me. Because I didn't have a chance to read the script, and I knew it was a strange situation, and nobody else was going to be acting but me. Right?
Well, so, Nicholson and Beatty were
but
going
I mean
to be
acting in a sense. Mike said to me, he said, you know, they're going to be awful. He said, they're going to just lie there and not do anything. I said, I understand. He said, I know. You can say no. He kept saying, I said, I understand what you're saying. Because if he's an actor himself, he knows the psychology of the whole thing. And, I mean, he's no dummy. He wasn't playing dumb. So the next day I got in the elevator after getting this phone call saying, we're ready for you now. And I was living in the Marmont where Carol was living. And I got down the elevator and sat down in this room. And in walked Jack, wearing dark glasses and a mink-lined Levi jacket, hungover, right? He'd finished Chinatown the day before. And then behind him was Warren. It was Warren Beatty, mm-hmm. Right? Warren Beatty, you know, walked in the door and said, how do you do? I don't think people realize that they're echelons, you know, in terms of, even, I mean, movie stars, if you're a stage actress, they're still movie stars.
Oh.
I don't care if you're starring on Broadway, they're still movie stars. Maybe movie stars feel the same way about Broadway people or something, I have no idea. But I just sat there going, poor invading a joke. And they walked in the room and they're all talking to each other, and I had not opened my mouth to say a word in about 15 minutes. And Mike said, this is Stockard Channing, she's going to help us out this afternoon. And I realized they don't even know if I'm an actress or not, right? So the first thing I had to say was, if you've seen the movie, was the scene in which Freddie comes out of the airplane. And she says, because originally that was the first thing in the script. And she's in tears, and she's Freddie. And she says, it was so absolutely hideous to me. I could cry. He cursed me. You know, so I said, well, that's what I have to do. And they were sitting around reading. And I'm not saying a word. You know that nightmare feeling that you haven't said a word? I said, I'm about to burst into tears and scream in this accent that I think is right. And I'm sitting next to Warren on this couch. The time comes, and I said, well, either do it or do it. Do it. Do it. So I opened my mouth and went, he was lovely. And Warren literally went like that. And he said, didn't say anything. He just did this sort of look. And then Jack had the next response. And then I said something, and Warren said something. And the next thing we knew, it was like a train getting going. And everybody started acting. And Mike was playing another part in it. You know, we were all just cooking for like, and it was like musician. It was that kind, that's the word I would use. It was cooking. It was like jamming for about 5 hours. At the end of which, Warren stood up and literally reached over and went like, excuse me, went. Right, which really put me at my ease. Don't you feel totally relaxed?
Did he push you?
Yeah, he just went, pretty good stock. And I still wasn't saying a word. And he said, well, it's going to be pretty difficult to hear anyone else in the part. And I said, that's the general idea. Whereupon people sort of looked at me, they laughed. It was very benign. But everybody was feeling kind of weird because it was practically as full a performance as we ultimately ended up giving. It was not very different from what ended up on the screen 6 months later.
Well, how long did you prepare psychologically for that meeting?
Not at all. It was...
Well, you knew beforehand
I knew I
going
was,
to come in.
Yes, but I did not realize, I must say, until I was in the room, what it was going to be like in terms of... Do you understand? I mean,
no,
you
must have imagined something.
No, I mean in terms of the difficulty of me doing my job in the situation. Sure, I had fantasies about it, right? You have fantasies about working with certain people, what they're going to be like. But I hadn't realized I was going to have to make that jump from an audience, you know, to a performer, and a performer full out in a real character. That's what I mean. Until that moment, I said to myself, I've really done it now. I remember asking Carol, I said, where's the ladies' room? And she said, down the hall. And I walked, and maybe you can understand this kind of behavior, I got up, left the room, went down the hallway, into the bathroom, and turned around 3 times. It was like, then I came back in to start over. You know that feeling of, it was
but
all
you
this
knew
kind
you were
of...
good, right.
Yeah, but I didn't know if I could get it up to do it, you know? Yeah, I knew I was good, and I knew also this was, I had to jump off the high diving board, right? It's equivalent to that kind of thing of being, if you're in the big stadium, you're in the, you know, the big pool, whatever, the board is a couple of meters higher than you thought it was going to be, but you do it anyway, and sometimes that thrust you give to yourself to overcome that difficulty that you're aware of, that you hadn't expected, really makes you be even better than you would have been if the difficulty wasn't there. Because I do know that the performance I gave that afternoon with them, the goose I had from the beginning, which is really coming out of fear, you know, I'm not going to kid myself or you, really enabled me to go full out, you know?
And if they had not responded, then you'd be dead, right?
Well, if they hadn't responded, I wouldn't have been doing the right thing. I would have been wrong for the part. I would have not been right to have done the part. It was... also, the chemistry wouldn't have been right, because in this film, it's very much the balance of these three people, how they, you know, they all, I mean, it's really a triangle in the sense of if my end didn't hold up, if Freddie, for example, was a real victim all the way down the line and said things even like, oh, you damn poo-poo faces, as opposed to, oh, you damn poo-poo faces.
Then they would have kissed Madeline Kahn in the park.
Well, the whole triangle would have gone a whole lot, it would have collapsed, you know, they needed, obviously, we talk about it later. And Mike said it was a robust quality I had, the energy I wrote to Freddie, and also that I did know the sound of her voice, which was very important, because she says outrageous things. She's not one straight line in the movie.
And both as a character and an actress, were not intimidated.
No, also that too, I guess, yeah. And that emerged in rehearsals and in the filming and everything, because it was difficult. Sure, it was difficult. Even in take a regular life situation, it was the equivalent of being the new kid in high school, and because... just geographically, I was 3,000 miles away from home, and I was in a whole new kind of milieu, a new kind of social situation, which they were very much at home in. I mean, Jack and Warren are like closest friends, and Mike and Jack have a terrifically close personal and professional relationship, and they all participate in the social world of Los Angeles and producers, direct, you know, the dinner parties and all that number, which, you know, is another aspect when you're making a movie. It doesn't really enter in when you're making a play, doing a play, you know, it's a kind of, you leave your life for the time of rehearsals and before opening, and then you go back to it. But when you're making a movie, you went home at night, you know. I never really got to see them socially at all. And there's a lot of some chit-chat going on. So I had to get by that, I realized, the first day of rehearsal. Also, the whole thing of them being like movie star numbers, to me, I had to get by. I had to kind of, I guess I came up as a scrappy, sort of bit of a wise ass, you know, which they liked because it was relieving to them, and that's the.
But that's what you've done all your life, right? You know that will work.
Sure, I know certain things that'll work. It will work, but it was also a limited version of myself, you see? And for 4.5 months, or 5 months practically, of dealing with people in these close quarters, and it and really these four or five people were always interacting, you know. It wasn't like a cast of 10, you know. Mm-hmm. It was just the three of us acting and Mike and Carol. And Carol wasn't there as much, even though I did strike a friendship with her, actually closer than any I had with the other people, you know. But you sort of, I will say that just psychologically, you say, well, they're only seeing Freddie. These people, even physically, I have black hair, black eyebrows, they don't have red hair and plucked eyebrows and dead white, you know, all that. And I found it would sort of gridge at me because these people only knew an aspect of me and they would assume it was me, you know, and even the role I, the behavioristic role that I would play to protect myself, you know. And I'm not knocking by any means the summer because it was a job and it was a terrific thing for me and I had no illusions about what it would mean in my career and in my life, you know. But I will say that it was often an oppressive life situation for me because of that.
Because
of the necessity to hold up my end of this triangle that I had never, you know, asked for in that sense. I mean, am I making myself clear
sure.
about the behavior?
Absolutely.
It happens all the time in work situations, I guess, but doing a film is so pervasive in your life, but not totally pervasive. I mean, it's not like you're
Well, then Warren Beatty and Jack Nicholson are acquaintances, right?
Oh, they're
friends,
close friends.
They're
no,
close
they're
friends.
Close friends from years back. I mean, they're buddies. They hang out together.
No, I mean with you.
No, I wouldn't say that. They're acquaintances. And I think that it worked the best for the film that we kept this weird kind of distance.
Right.
We would be a lot of joking around, and it was like, you know, the cat and the two dogs, you know, but the cat was pretty strong, too, and they would sort of play with each other a lot, and then suddenly, it was like the behavior of two large dogs, is how I can describe it, and I'd be sitting there, and I'd talk to Mike a lot, and I'd talk to the crew a lot, too, you know, but essentially, I'd sit, and then I look, it was like these two dogs, they'd be playing and rolling around and scrapping, and then they'd run off, you had to call them back, and then they come back and they play a little bit more. And then they both stop and they go, ah, and they'd attack. And they would both literally land on me, like physically sometimes. And I had to go, ah, either verbally or actually physically, you know. And they loved it. They loved it that I sort of, you know, and sometimes I said, I'm tired. I don't want to come up with some great remark that's going to, you know. And I said, or else I just say that. I say, oh, you know, like that. And I guess it showed on the screen because it's like, it was always that thing between the three of us, you know. And I mean, we got along fine and everything, but the benefit of it was that we didn't have any of those kind of weird power trips or mm-hmm. political, you know, everything was very upfront. It was a bit like the kid sister kind of thing, and it was that kind of, you know.
Did they make it to make money, or, because I don't think it's going to excuse me, but I think it's too offbeat to be a commercial film.
Well, I don't know. It's open to
I know it's
the business.
Open strong in New York.
I don't know. It's funny. It's very funny. I don't know.
I love the film. I like the film, but I think it's whimsical and it's kind of a trifle. But I like.
What's strange about that film? That film, when you read the reviews, and I don't understand this, is that it's like people reviewing 10 different films. It's very people project it. I don't know what it is. So I can't really tell. I don't really know about stuff like that. I think they certainly did it to make money. They own a piece of it. It was written for them, like Carol Eason,
well,
the characters.
But they're changing the ending, I've heard.
The behavior. They're changing, I think, to the point. First of all, that's a rumor I've heard as well. And I said, is this true?
They said, I was told.
This is of 2 days ago.
I was told that.
I think they're going to freeze on the reaction. That's the only change.
Oh.
There is no other ending. We didn't shoot another ending. Pull it, you know, they won't have the walk in back into the house.
Are the two men together?
They're going to freeze on their reaction, Jack looking at Warren, after I say I'd never believe that in a million years.
Okay.
That's the only change they can make.
That's good.
It tidies it up. It doesn't really alter it then, you see, in that nature.
No, the rest is meaningless. The rest is unnecessary.
Yeah. And that's the only way they can change it, unless they. I mean, that's the change I've heard of.
Oh, okay. Let's go back a step. How well did you know Carol Eastman before you read for her?
Never met any of them.
You never met her?
No.
Even though you lived in the same apartment with her?
Same hotel.
Hotel
yeah.
with her.
But I didn't live there for longer. I was just there for a couple of weeks doing a TV show and a play. Also, she is the reclusive Carol Eastman. And she's keeps very much to herself, but she actually lives there.
Okay. What was your contact to get this chance?
My agent.
Your agent.
Yeah, it was done through channels. Also, my agent did know Kitty Hawks, her name is, and she did know.
How's that? Oh, your agent is Kitty Hawks.
Howard,
how do I spell that?
Howard Hawks' daughter.
Oh, I know Howard very well. Yes.
His daughter.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Small world. In fact, the last time we were out to California, my wife and I visited Howard for 3 hours. His dog died, incidentally. One of his two dogs died.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Old man. I don't know whether he was a wonderful middle-aged man, but he's a wonderful old man.
Well, this is his daughter, and she's also a very good friend of mine. She's like, we came out to California about the same time, and it coincided. She came with the agency, and I met her, and I'm about, I think she represents Madeline Kahn, but originally I was the only actor that she represented, just because we had a personal affinity and friendship with each other. So it's not exactly your classic, you know,
sure.
Oh, Harry, what you got for me today? Kind of relationship, you know.
Right.
But still, it was done.
But
you
have to have that contact. Somewhere you had to have that contact.
She had, you know, had a great confidence and a personal sort of, not just confidence, just belief, but it was like a, how can I put it? We share a kind of entrepreneurial view of my career. You know what I mean? It's like, well, this would be great. Let's go for that. You know, as
entrepreneurial? Are you sure that you may get through with that word with journalist?
Yeah, I have that view of
career.
I'd say that eventually I'd like to be in that position of developing projects for myself and going after it. I think it's the only thing to do, you know, just to keep yourself going at the same kind of pace. So it was a biggie. We wanted it, you know, and it was right too. It was right. I knew I could do it. The character, you know.
But what did they sell? What did your agent sell that you had done? I mean, how did she?
She didn't. She
do
sent
any
over
of that.
Some pictures of me.
Just that picture that I got that doesn't look anything like you.
Which one?
Have you seen that picture? The beauty star. The oh, there it is.
That. It looks like me.
It does
like
not.
In the afternoon. What else? Is that the only one you got?
I got several, but I have a friend who wants you to sign it because he's predicted stardom for you, and he wants you to sign it to Michael, you know, and he's a schlep, and he's always on my back. So I said, I'll try and get her signature.
Sure.
So he's...
he said that was one of them, actually.
Let me ask you another question. Now the next film you're going to make is for Jerry Schatzberg.
Right.
Who is not a successful director.
He's
direct. Okay, okay. He's from, he used to be a model photographer.
Still a photographer.
Right. Mm-hmm. And he did Faye Dunaway, and he did...
Panic in Needle Park.
Panic in Needle Park and Scarecrow, right. Why him?
I wanted to do the project. I wanted to do the story, which is the old American girl about a car thief. And he became connected with the project after I was first interested in it. And as it developed, I think it's a good project for him because, first of all, he has elements of humor often. Like in Scarecrow, you can see it. When I went back to see Scarecrow, I could see it. But usually it's a down, it's like a, you know, downbeat, kind of tone to most of his works, which has not made him commercially successful. And this story is not comedy, but it's not a story. It's a story about a car thief and a caper kind of situation within it. It's an energetic. I have an energy, and I think the story has an energy, and also has a certain line, a tighter line, than the previous projects. But
and you say that he has. Did you see Rafferty and the Goldust Twins?
Yeah.
Now, how would you compare Schatzberg's sense of humor with Rafferty, with Richards' sense of humor? You can't compare it.
It's difficult because, I mean, you have to, what's the basis of comparison
right.
when you do the same project, right? The project is so different, say from Scarecrow to Rafferty and the Goldust Twins, just because of the, first of all, it's almost like a fairy tale, Rafferty and the Goldust Twins. I mean, the situation is highly
That's another one I liked. That's another one that I...
You know, I mean, it's a...
I love films like that.
Yeah, but it's a rarefied kind of atmosphere, whereas Jerry's tending to get down, and he also has a great... One thing I do like about Jerry in the past, what I've seen, is that he has a wonderful eye for actors in terms of casting all around. He's a, the smaller parts, you know, the lower echelon, the supporting parts, whatever. And he has an ability to get a terrific performances out of an actor because he doesn't push them beyond what they're about a truth level of what they're doing. And he also loves improvisation. And I was interested in that because of the non-theatrical aspects of the project and his style. Also, we got Vilmos Sigismund as a cameraman. Which
well, I know him very well. Very
fantastic.
Well.
Well, then, you know,
yes.
And it's a whole other kind of project. And I think you have to take risks. I think there's enormous risks involved in any project. And I think in The Fortune, there was an atmosphere that we had it made about the whole thing because, you know, all this in heaven too, it was, you know, and I'm very curious to go on a project which doesn't have it. It's up against stuff. Yeah, a lot of risks involved. A risk for me because it's a totally different kind of character. It's a street person. It's a, you know, so it's a Freddy. It's totally my picture. I mean, you know, there's nothing to hide behind. I'm working with Jerry and with the writer now, and we all three of us work together, which is a whole other way of approaching a project. I went with them to Tacoma with Billy and Jerry and the production manager and the art director, and we scattered locations together. It's a fantastically interesting way.
Who wrote it?
Brenda Perla wrote
the original. How do I spell her last name?
Perla wrote the original screenplay. It's her story. It's she was a car thief and whatever. And rewrites on it are being done by Marilyn Golden. And I think they're going to share screen credit.
G-O-L-D-I-N.
And it's really interesting for me to work this way with people. And I found a way to work with Jerry. I found a way to work with him in a whole different kind of relationship than I had with Mike, for example. And as it emerged, we don't make these decisions on one level. Many decisions are made to make the ultimate decision, right? The project arrived, they wanted me to do it. Then Jerry came in the scene, I had to deal with certain reservations I had. Then I met him, I got to have a relationship with him. I could see where we could help each other. I mean, you know, and because that's the way it really emerges. And also it's your life, you're living your life. And if you like to work, the creation of the project should be more important, not as important, but more important than the end result. And I think you can get too involved. It's like a painter. I mean, to a painter, it's the process of creating the work, and not, you know, once it's done, it's done, and it's done, and you care for it. But the same way I feel about being an actress and doing films. For example, The Fortune, I used to go to dailies every day, because that, to me, was the most immediate contact I had with the project. And I had no desire to see Rough Cut. I really was reluctant to see the final picture, to tell you the truth, because it's out of my hands. I had to let it go. It was hard to let it go because of my career. It meant so much, right? It was a big deal. Who's going to kid who, you know? But, and I didn't, you know, I had to wait 9 months till it was released, and I said, oh, God, it's hanging out. Will they get it out there already? It's just like having a baby, you know? Though I'm glad I had the time because it gave me the time to sort of live with my life and not put it in a place, in a position of, you know, this is it's Mike's picture. My performance was in every cut, every daily, right, every rush or whatever you want to call it. Every piece of film I saw in myself, I'd say, well, did I, that was, oh, I see, well, I learned from that. That's what has to do with me. And I would stand behind what I did. Now, there would be times when I will stick my neck out and I will fall flat in my face. Other times when I play it safer and I'll get away with it, I know that. That's the way it happens, you know. So when you asked me about Jerry and this project, I worked through certain reservations I had and he worked through his reservations about me. I mean, he looked at me and he said, well, what is this from, you know, The Fortune and whatever. And then
I hope he doesn't change you into a Kitty Wynn, however.
No, this is by no means, this is my Burt Reynolds, Steve McQueen, John Wayne role, you know. I mean, I will say that it's a totally different kind of thing. She's a whole different stuff. The one thing she does share with old Freddie is that they're both very energetic, rather robust individuals.
Well, I mean, that's what you have to do. Being a talented person, you have to do different things. You can't get typed.
No, I don't want that in my life. Also, that's what I do. I'm in stage. You know, people have only seen me on film like one or two times, but that's one of my things I do. You know, I change my face, I change, you said, it doesn't look like, well, that did look like me that afternoon. you know, and it can look like me again, but the same way I don't look like Freddie, you know. And that's the joy of it for me in terms of being an actress. That sort of, what's the word? It begins with a P. It's a Greek god. Protean. Protean aspect of existence, even, of your own life, you know. I mean, that's really like dress-up time, let's face it.
What's really, you know, a critic or somebody who's fairly sensitive sitting in the theater wants to make a parallel between the actress he sees. He wonders whether anybody could be better, and he wants to place her in the proper perspective. And he wants to be reminded of somebody. You know who you reminded me of? And it was really fascinating, because I hadn't read the Fortune, the press material, until afterwards. You reminded me of Maureen Stapleton.
Yeah.
You really did.
I must explain that story, by the way. That in that thing, what happened was, she came up to me, and I'd never met her before, and Ron Clark, who was the playwright, was the opening note of this play, said, Maureen wants to meet you. Well, I mean, you say Maureen, you don't say Maureen Stapleton, you know. And she was sitting, I mean, this idol, right, was sitting in this banquette at this restaurant, and she was sitting there, and I came over, and he said, this is Sarah Chaney, and she went, and she hugged me, and she went, you're brilliant, 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 but she said, Michelle, she said, but there's something wrong, he said, you're too pretty, you're much prettier close up than you are on stage, that shouldn't be. You meet Joe, and she grabbed me, whisked me off to the back room, and she did call up this makeup man called Joe Gonzano, who had done the makeup for Apple Tree for Barbara Harris. You know those wonderful changes that she went through.
Do you have any idea how to spell Chris?
Cranzano.
Thank you.
And I saw him, and he came to my house, and he taught me how to make up stage makeup, you know. And she was once approached about being the landlady in this picture, and she couldn't do it. She had the commitments. But every time I see her, we have this thing with each other, and I always I don't know what it was. I don't really, people, this person said, oh, you've worked together. He said, no, we've met two or three times, but
you've seen her work.
We have a similar kind of corruption. Oh God,
yes,
you know. So I'm very flattered by that, but that came out of a story that I was
my reaction had nothing to do with it.
I know, but just in general, that thing is being ripped up and thrown away because it was filled out.
Yeah, but
by
that's
someone.
Not the kind of stuff that I use.
I just didn't realize it existed till today, and I'm.
Oh, you didn't?
Yeah, because I was on a television show, and they asked me about. Oh, tell us about Yul Brynner. What? And then they said, well, you saw King and I, and I had to tell this really unfunny little story that was like a 30 seconds out of 4 hours talk I had with this publicist once 3 years ago, you know?
Right.
Anyway, so I'm a little annoyed that that worked out that way, because it just is very counterproductive.
Who have you learned from, or you modeled yourself on, or have you borrowed from, or? Well, there must be somebody.
No, I think I've been compared to a lot of people in my life, that in just for either reviews or personally, whatever, in terms of my performance or my looks. And it doesn't really add up to one person. No. I think I probably absorbed. I'm a mimic, and I have a good ear. Maybe I picked up things indirectly. But essentially what drew me to acting was this thing I talked about earlier. I was never exposed to that much theater or television or even film when I was a child. When I was an adolescent, I remember I used to go to practically every movie I could see, and it was pretty much indiscriminate, you know. And it had largely to do with fantasy life, my own, because I never expected I'd be an actress. I just would get off on films. I was a fan. I was a real fan, but not in the sense of, oh, I want to see every Katharine Hepburn, every Carol Lombard picture. It was just everything. A certain kind of encyclopedic fantasist, you know?
Yeah.
And I wasn't like an authority even on it. I wasn't that kind of. I just got off on movies, and I used to act out when I was a kid. I mean, I was one of those kids who read a lot of books and was left to themselves a lot, right? And I wasn't allowed to watch television except on weekends, and I wasn't taken to the theater, even though I was raised in New York. I was taken to the musical theater, and I would hear cast albums a lot, but which, as I mentioned there, it is true, but I wasn't taken to straight theater, and probably much less than a lot of people a later man in life when I went to boarding school and I went to college, mm-hmm. you know? Because people come to New York and they go to the theater if you live in New York.
Right.
You
know? Sure. I'm from Philadelphia originally, so I know a lot of it.
So it wasn't that kind of thing. I mean, it was as much, you know, men as women, too. I would probably pick up mannerisms from performances I would see.
Such a...
And at the last thing I would see, I can remember, this would be the process. I would go to a movie, I still do it, and I'll walk out and I'll feel like the person I just saw. And I'll start walking and picking up things like them. And then it'll go away, but obviously it's back there somewhere. And I'm analyzing it in hindsight now, you know, exteriorly.
Sure.
So it's not that I think this way when I create a performance. When I create a character, it's much more out of behavioral stuff. Obviously I avoid, in my own head, linking up what I do to another person, because I don't, that bothers me in some way. I don't feel that's my process, you know, of work created.
That's not a bad process.
I resist the concept of modeling myself after somebody. I mean, there must be somebody, and I can't just think of them.
What was your major in college?
American History and Literature.
Well, mine was literature. I teach literature on the university level now. And, you know, T.S. Eliot said, you borrow but you leave your own fingerprints on it.
Yeah.
I like that. I think there's nothing wrong with borrowing.
I think that's what happens, though. It's a channeling process. But it's not as if I had an idol and a couple of idols even and people, you know.
How about literary? Who are some of your favorite writers?
It's very difficult for me to say because... Again, it's very eclectic and strange.
Okay, let me give you a couple names.
Yeah.
Joyce Carol Oates.
I've never read any Joyce Carol
Oates.
I started and I couldn't.
I hate her. I think she can't write a sentence. Okay. Philip Roth.
I laughed a lot when I read the earlier stuff, especially. The last one, it was so painful
mm-hmm.
and so
My
down.
Life is a Man, you mean? My Life is a Man?
Yeah. That I felt it was a bummer. It was for me, even reading it, I was very painful. And I couldn't dissociate him from what he was writing at that point.
I don't think you can.
Yeah.
Because his wife was killed in an automobile accident, so it's...
Also, I later heard sort of the relationship he had was very similar to the...
Yeah,
you know,
it was.
And... So the sour, I was out with a very sour kind of taste.
Mm-hmm. What's it, what were you just been talking about? The fantastic success of the picture? Yeah.
What?
What?
Oh, you wanted to give me another writer?
That's a real thing to be talking about. It's a very successful movie so far.
One theater in New York?
In one theater in New York.
Yeah.
We figure that New York is a tough audience. And
I think so, but why don't you come to Dayton?
They are. All things come to Dayton.
No, they don't.
No?
No, they don't. That's why I have to leave so often. That's why you didn't even come to Dayton.
Well, don't you like coming to Cleveland?
Absolutely not. I think it's a horrible city.
Oh.
I think this is like Pittsburgh.
Oh, we were thinking it was a rather nice place.
Well, of course. Yeah. I mean, she hasn't seen it.
We were in the arcade. It's wonderful.
Well, arcades are always nice in every city. You know, you get some of the quality and the character, but the city is not like an arcade.
No.
The city is
oh. Let's continue.
Pollutionville. Yeah.
Give me another one.
Sure,
okay, this
sure,
is fine.
Sure.
I love this. This is
Nabokov.
Oh, I adore him. Absolutely adore him. I read Ada this winter. I went to Moscow. And on the train to Moscow, I was frantically finishing Ada by sitting up all night, because I was convinced they were going to confiscate it at the border, which they didn't, but I'm really glad I sat up and did it.
Why didn't you go to Moscow?
Why? I had a chance to go to Moscow, so I went.
You see, this is the kind of interview we're having
fun.
Yeah, I went with a bunch of people who were going, and we connected with the University of Texas in the Slavic department.
Flannery O'Connor.
I was in a film that was made for one of her short stories, but the only film that was made.
Oh, really?
Called Comforts of Home, which is From Everything That Rises Must Converge. And I need to say that it was fascinating to me, but for me I have an added dimension to that because I actually worked on that thing. And That was done like 4 or 5 years ago. It hasn't been released. It probably won't be.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. It's been shown at festivals various places. It's a 45-minute film. What are you going to do with the 45-minute
film? Who directed it?
Was
it?
A man called Jerry Shore. He was had a commercial production company. It was his first film. He put his own money in it. No, it was made to be part of a trilogy with Everything That Rises Must Converge and another story. His name I don't remember from the same collection. And they didn't have the money to make the whole thing. They were making this one story to raise the money for the whole project. And it was a pity they didn't have the money up front, because it would have been a very interesting project. And it's been shown to various people, and it was about 5 years ago, I guess, this summer that we made it. And Tony Bill helped him get the rights to it. And he saw it. He was nuts. A lot of people were nuts about the whole thing. It was very strange.
Why doesn't he release it?
Well, you can't release it. It's 45 minutes long. Also, it really is part of the whole thing. I mean, it's the pace of it. It's ironic that he was smart enough to know that if you make a trilogy, they all should interconnect in some kind of way, and even in terms of the tempi, you know, involved. But consequently, this one piece does not really stand on its own, because it is only a third of an uncreated whole. Which I think also contributed to the reason you couldn't get the money for it. It's a very, you know,
was that
project.
Your first film?
Yeah, that was the first.
So you have your scars.
Yeah, it was really sad. It was a, you know, wonderful experience in making. It was heartbreaking that, you know, it wasn't.
But to Kathleen Porter.
I haven't read very much of her.
John Updike.
The last thing I read was Couples. I read it again. It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun read. Nice and rich and gamey. You know, it's just jolly and fun. But, wait a minute. I'm a big fan of Nathaniel West, to tell you the truth.
Also more.
And that's really what I read. What do you say? Life is terrible.
In fact, my wife said, couldn't she play Faye Greener after seeing it? And
yeah.
I said, I don't know.
I was told, I have a very close friend who wrote a screenplay with Cool Million. He was very close to West's work, closer than I am, really. And we went and saw it the other day, and I said, well, what do you think? He said, no, it's an intelligence number. I mean, it's like it has to be that empty quality.
Karen Black can't carry the film. She just can't carry
the
show,
film. We don't see what he sees in her. You know, we don't
and
see
they,
that.
And I don't understand why they don't end the way that the book does, because it's such a perfect ending with his going on making this absurd sound.
Yeah.
In the beginning of the book, Todd's looking out the window and sees this army fleeing, followed by a little fat man, and they go around the half a steamboat. It's a perfect beginning, and it's not in the film.
I know.
I mean,
yeah,
why
he adds his other stuff.
Why they ruin the spirit of a word?
I know.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, but I.
That's